اخاتي يا بنت.
Estava.
E how que está ele, né?
É, eu me ofendi espaço imediatamente. Cai para uma casa ao conecto.
Ok. So, se stay put, né? Entendeu? Falei, o menino.
É, usa-me falela, mas cai a bando me acorda.
Yes.
O
Ok.
pelele, a bando me apelele cai.
Ok.
Ok.
Bye-bye.
Molotov,
Madame,
ça n'a pas la date de ce soubette.
et puis programme. program ebe
program che attend
attend
yo kan uyifumana che
and sakhangelana na what in minutes ezininzi apha kusinti.
Okay, Chair. Man, tell me one card as a calling, Chair.
Oh. Honorable members, how are you?
Listen, and you?
Very well, thank you.
Nice to see you again, Jay.
Likewise, Honorable Stain. I'm sure you enjoyed the debate in the house.
I did, I always do. Thank you, Jay, and you?
We're happy that is put behind us.
Yes.
And it has been sent to the NCLP now.
All right, we'll leave it to them now.
Yeah. Honorable Clape, how are you? Honorable Clape? Mama Ledu.
Hello, Chair.
How are you?
I'm good, thanks. And you, sir?
Very well, thanks. I'm waiting for the program for tonight, huh? The
okay.
Agenda.
All right, we'll send one received.
Yeah.
Send it to me a notice because you can't attend a notice.
Okay, okay. To me.
Okay, Che.
Say email or WhatsApp?
Say email, Che.
Okay.
Okay.
Molweni ma.
Yeah, mama ndabe zithakunza alinethi apha ePitoli kuyafiwa. So xa ningadiva nje ndiyakhwaza nangoku.
Thubela lovula apha emakhaya bana uyidingi wena.
Andinyani.
Manje apha kuthi mnaloo ndaba ezinto xa bekhulu siyayidinga loo vula.
Siyaduduma kuyafiwa. Ewe.
Hayi, siyabulela.
Seningenile nonke ngoba ingathi i-house isaqhuba nje pha.
Sizamele ungena isininzi sethu. Kodwa bebesagqibezela.
Ngoba kuthethi public accounts chairperson ngu.
Ah.
Eh. Nabonana kahle no Ivan.
Hayi sambona ma.
Okay.
Bahlala ke ngoba ndiye ndaba introducer ndabashiya. Bahlala baqhuba. Icacweni uba zinintsi iingxaki eziphaya emthatha.
Ewe.
But sinethemba zawusombululeka.
Hayi masethembi.
Mamkakaza. Manyamza.
Che.
Ewe.
Oyithumela uSimpia che.
Phi.
Kwi-email yakho che.
Le igqibongena ngoku enkosi ndiyabulela.
Kulungile tata.
Okay che.
All right. Honorable members, let us begin with our meeting. For those that have been able to join, I see there are about 27 of us that are here. Manyamza, do we have a quorum? Honorable Mahlatsi is here. Honorable Klape, Honorable Stain, Honorable Mahlo.
Yes, we do, Chair.
All right. Thank you. Any apologies?
Picture, Chair. Her mother passed away last night or this morning, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable members, let me take this opportunity to welcome you to our portfolio committee meeting on agriculture, land reform and rural development. Also, let me take this opportunity to acknowledge the passing of Honorable Trete's mother, who we learned this morning that she departed last night, and we wish Honorable Trete all the strength during this time and offer our prayers for her mother. May her soul rest in peace. Honorable members, let me also take this opportunity to welcome the Minister, Honorable Umamo Didiza, who is with us and sitting under a heavy storm in Pretoria. She will try and speak loud to be audible. She is with us, and should we have any interferences, just bear in mind that she did tender her apology due to the storm in Pretoria right now. Let me also take the opportunity to welcome the officials of the department that are with the minister in attendance. The guests that have joined us and honorable members, as our citizens in the Republic who have had an interest on this, we will today be dealing with the allocation of state land to applicants. And then we will also be considering and adopting our outstanding minutes. I would therefore, honorable members, since being International World AIDS Day, do call out particularly to South African activists and those that are living with HIV/AIDS to continue being champions against this pandemic, to continue fighting the stigma against HIV/AIDS, and ensuring that our people have access to all information necessary and also to treatment for those that may have come into contact and are living with HIV/AIDS. Those that we have lost to the pandemic, we say may their souls rest in peace. Honorable members, I will now, without any further delays, hand over to the Honorable Minister to render opening words, and then we will take the presentation on the release and allocation of state land to applicants. Honorable Minister, Amotidis, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, senior officials, and all those who are in the meeting from the Portfolio Committee side as the support staff. We would like to thank you very much for affording us this opportunity to come and give you a further briefing on the progress in the allocation of state land. As indicated before, Chairperson, President made an announcement that government will release 700,000 hectares of state land as part of its contribution to land reform. We started with the process in February, where some of the land was already released to successful beneficiaries. We then made a public announcement in October calling for those who are interested and who meet the criteria that was set to apply. Today in our briefing, we will be taking through the members of the Portfolio Committee on the number of applications we've received both online and those that were deposited in our district offices. We will also indicate the process from now on how we will deal with the allocation of the land in question. I just want to highlight to honorable members, because this has been the repeated question asked, both in Parliament, in the Portfolio Committee, as well as by the public. The land in question that we're talking about is the land that formed part of the South African Development Trust land, some of which was earmarked for release by the then Homeland, some of which was allocated to people, and when the leases lapsed, particularly those who were farmers, there was never an administrative process that actually continued to deal with those lands, whether people are offered the, you know, the land to buy and so on. So in a sense, this land we're talking about, it's about regularization, also allocation of those lands that are not vacant. So as the team will present, we'll indicate in the sequencing, how are we going to deal with the land in question? You'd recall also we had said we will do a land inquiry so that we can assess where the people are, the terms at which they were there, and the utilization of that land, and make the allocation necessary so that they can have at least a form of tenure that affirms that this land, they can utilize it productively to their use. We know that some of the people have been there even more than 30 years. And on those matters, we will have to look at the regularization, working with cabinet as well on how we treat some of those people who might have already been on that land for more than 30 years. We had agreed as a department that we will actually work on this process in a project team so that we have the dedicated team of officials who would really drive on this process to its final conclusion in terms of the allocation as well as the training of those would-be beneficiaries. In the sequencing, we have agreed at a departmental level that we will start with those land where there is no contestation, where the land is not encumbered, and actually make those as the first phase of the processing. And then when the land verification report, land inquiry report rather, comes, we will then deal with those. We've also put structures to deal with issues of disputes where such disputes may arise, as well as structures that will deal with the appeals. So I just thought it's important for me, Chair, just to give this overview, and then I will hand over to the department team led by the acting director general, and in particular, Mr. Ndove, who's the DDG responsible, will be supported by the team in the presentation to the portfolio committee. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Minister. I have got challenges in terms of the camera in my office. It's not picking up. I hope that it will pick up later on for the presentation. The presentation today, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, will be led by DDG Ndove, who's responsible for the program under which we will be delivering the plan. It will be broken into two parts. The first part will be led by DDG Ndove, to be followed by one that will be led by Advocate Mgwengwe on the process. So both colleagues will be sharing that presentation. And thereafter, we will take questions from the honorable members. I will now hand over to Ndate Ndove to lead with the presentation. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair.
Thanks, the acting DG, Honorable Chair, Honorable Minister, Deputy Ministers, Honorable Members, colleagues, good evening. The minister has already laid a very good foundation for this presentation. All that I can add is that the structure of the presentation follows the letter that we have received dated 24th November from the portfolio committee indicating areas that we're supposed to focus on as when we present progress on the state allocation project. So all the sub-headings that we have are actually extracted from the letter from the portfolio committee. I will need to indicate that in the first part of it was the summary of the policy framework. The policy that actually underpin the state allocation and disposal of state land is the state land lease and disposal policy that articulate key steps that are supposed to be followed in order for the release and the disposal of a state land. Later on, we also incorporated the draft, which has just been approved, of national policy on beneficiary selection and allocation, which was later also incorporated into that broader policy framework that underpin this project. These are the key areas, policy areas: equitable access to land with secured rights, to provide fair, credible, and transparent process for land allocation and leasing of state land, to ensure household and national food security, to ensure optimal use of agricultural land, provide relevant skills and support for sustainable production, to ensure that prioritized and targeted groups gain access to land. Can we move to the next slide? Ralph, can you move to the next slide? Okay. The overview of the project. No, no. Go back. Yeah. Overview of the project. It will ensure equitable access to land for qualifying previously disadvantaged citizens, particularly women, youth, and persons with disabilities, to contribute to rapid release of state land as part of government contribution towards the land reform. Unlocking of the economy through optimal use of underutilized and vacant agricultural land, to contribute to economic growth by creating jobs, reducing poverty and inequality, to protect the land rights of the vulnerable groups. In terms of the project objectives, ensure equitable access to land by previously disadvantaged individuals, but more importantly, to provide and protect the land rights of vulnerable groups. To ensure the national and household food security, and as well, again, to provide a fair, credible, transparent process for selection of beneficiaries for land allocation. The utilization of the land, as well as to ensure proper training for the beneficiaries to utilize the land in a sustainable manner. Can you move to the next slide? These are the targeted groups, women, youth, and persons with disabilities, unemployed military veterans, farm dwellers, farm workers, labor tenants, unemployed agricultural graduates, and also youth that also have participated in the NARTEC program. Next slide. Minister has already outlined the approach that we are using in terms of how we are going to deal with the allocation. And indeed, we've got land that is encumbered and the land that is not encumbered. Our first approach will be to deal with the land that is not encumbered. And later on, as and when the process of land rights inquiry continues to deal with where they are, where land is encumbered, as it gets released, and then it will also be allocated accordingly. Can we move to the next slide? These are the timeframes for completion of the state land allocation. We have started in October 15th. The advert ran into the 20th November. Initially, it was supposed to be the 15th, but it was extended because of the huge demand that we have experienced, especially in the last week of the submission of application. So in order not to disadvantage other people, it was extended by some few days. The application system used both electronic, which means online application, as well as the manual. However, the manual forms will ultimately be captured into the system so that we can only have one database. We should just remember that not so long we presented before this committee the COVID intervention, and one of the key areas that were a problem, it was data management, especially the use of spreadsheet. And in this project, we have tried not to make the same mistakes so that we can increase the credibility of our information. Capturing of the forms have already started. It was actually going alongside with the application, and we target to complete it by the 7th. That will be Monday next week. So far, we have received, not so far, because this is the total application received, because we're not going to receive further applications. In terms of the manual forms that we have received, is 16,005. With respect to the online application, is 21,258. The process of cleaning up capturing has already started, and it will be completed soon. From there, we'll do the validation, confirmation of the application received. We'll commence on the 9th. That is next week. The district beneficiary selection screening committees will convey to validate those applications. Next slide. The screening against the mandatory and eligibility criteria will be done by that committee of the district. And again, we will also do what we call ID and personal verification. This is to ensure that all the applicants have got valid IDs confirmed by Home Affairs, and that they are not public servants, also confirmed by the DPSA. Once that is completed, there will be a process of asset verification, which will commence on the 4th of January, where we will be going to visit all the prioritized or those that will be shortlisted for interviews. It will be done after when the shortlisting will have been done by the next committee that I'll talk to in the next slide, which is the provincial technical committee. This will be done at the district level. The site advertised will also be visited before the commencement of the interviews. Next slide. Interviews will commence on the 14th of January next year. Provincial Technical Committee will do the quality assurance, shortlisting, do with all everything about compliance, interviews, and recommendation. Those that are recommended will then be passed to the National Selection and Approval Committee for final approval, which will be based in national. I need to indicate to the chair and members of the portfolio committee that in all the structures that I'm indicating, it will be constituted by the officials inclusive of certain targeted departments that are going to be part of those committees. But in order to ensure that the process is fair, transparent and credible, we have also invited external stakeholders that have got interest in the issues of land to also participate on those structures. Some will be participating as contributing directly. Others will also participate as observers into those structures, just to ensure that indeed the process is fair, credible and transparent. Can we move to the next one? Dispute Resolution Committee. The Dispute Resolution Committee will continue to work. It has already started the work. It will continue to work and deal with all disputes that will emerge during the process of allocation. We will mainly focus on mediation to deal with disputes, to ensure that disputes are resolved quickly. We'll also deal with issues that relate to land invasion, working together with safety structures that are there already to deal with issues of land invasion. And also, it will get referrals from land rights inquiry in order to deal with all matters that deals with disputes. The next one is the land rights inquiry. Minister has already outlined its work to deal with confirming the rights of the people that are already on those farms. Those that are outlined is what will happen after, where there will be need to record their rights, ensure that they are publicly recorded and publicized, and ensure where they are vulnerable groups like your labor tenants will have to, within that land, survey the land, subdivide the land to ensure that they have got secure tenure within the land that within that land that in question. And those rights will be awarded. And where lease have to be done, the lease will be done as well. Where there will be disposal will be done as well. The Land Allocation Appeals Committee, this will be completely an independent process where any form of appeal that will come as a result of allocation will be referred to this committee to deal with issues of appeal. Can you move to the next slide? I will therefore request Advocate Ngwengwe to take on from this from this slide.
Thank you, Chairperson. As it was noted earlier, the presentation has sought to follow the structure that was provided by the Portfolio Committee in its letter when it called for this meeting. So this part that I'm dealing with now, it seeks to answer the question on the approach and methods used to identify the farms that you're talking about. So when this process started, it started in August 2018. When the instruction was received, there wasn't time that we could deploy people to establish what is vacant and what is underutilized. We therefore had to undertake a desktop approach. We relied mostly on satellite images, which helped us to conduct a special analysis of what farms we consider to be vacant or underutilized. We then outsourced the physical verification part, because once we had identified the farms, we had to get people on the ground to establish what was happening on those farms. We also had to undertake an agricultural potential analysis, because we wanted to know what can these farms be used for. We had to establish whether or not some of them are not claimed in terms of the Restitution of Land Rights Act. And once we had done so, because the physical verification was outsourced, we then had to turn to our colleagues to say, okay, you're sitting in these provinces, you deal with some of these farms on a daily basis. What do you know about them? That is the last stage, which is called final verification utilizing local departmental knowledge. Okay, can we move to the next slide? In terms of the special analysis that we conducted, we looked at land that is administered by national government, by provincial governments, all the nine of them, by all municipalities, and by state-owned enterprises. The next slide. In terms of this special analysis, part of what, of course, we had to do was to identify the sources of special data and then to source the data itself. We had to define what we mean by vacant or partially vacant or underutilized. We had to look at or identify certain parameters that we had to use in order to come to a conclusion that a farm is vacant or it is underutilized. We then had to map those farms. Mapping in this case meant we had to ensure that the farm, as we see it in DITS data, it connects to Surveyor General data so that we can then map it and produce maps of it. Of course, then we had to perform a GIS analysis in order to identify these farms. Can you move to the next slide? In terms of the data sources, That is just a list of what data we looked at, who controls that data. I trust that members have already read this part, so I'm going to move to the next slide. In terms of the parameters that we had to use, we accept that someone else may have used different parameters, but within the time that we had, this is what we had to use. We had to look at the land cover class. Is the farm grassland? Is it barren land? Is it shrub land? Is it naturally wooded? Is it located in a suitable terrain? There's a relationship between what you see as parameters here and what we listed on the other side as data sources, because it was from that information that we were able to then use these parameters. Part of what we had to decide is, what if the farm is located in an indigenous forest? We ended up saying, okay, at least it must be less than 10% of the property inside an indigenous forest if we have to consider it for purpose of this exercise. Then the other question was, what if it is in a protected area? We had to say it should at least be less than 10% of it that is inside a protected area. So these are the parameters that we used, and we came to the conclusion of the farms that we found. Part of the debate was when we presented this to other colleagues was, we had to decide what should be the extent of a property that we look at. So we took an approach that was biased towards bigger farms. We said at least it must be 50 hectares or more. As a result, we did not look at properties that were less than 50 hectares. Yes, we accept that they may be useful for agricultural purposes, but this is the conclusion that we reached because we were working within timelines that were not on our side. Can we move to the next slide? When we were doing the mapping, when we sought to link GIDS data and surveyor general data, part of the problem that we had was that some properties did not link at all. You would have a property in GIDS, but when you are looking for that property in the surveyor general website, you couldn't find it. It's not that it doesn't exist. Certain things may have happened to the property. A property could be registered in the GIDS office. Then subsequent to its registration, it could be a farm, and then a diagram gets approved in terms of which a general plan gets created on that property. Therefore, what the Survey General will then keep as a record would be this general plan, which is now created. So when you look at that farm that is in this, then you don't find it. Not that it has disappeared, it's only that certain changes have occurred in the Survey General data. So those are some of the problems that we had. As a result, properties where there was no link between SG data and DITS data, we completely excluded them. But there were properties where you find that though they do link, but the extent is not the same. Now, we decided that those, we would take them and use them because the property is there, it exists in both. There could have been finger trouble at the time when the property was captured, particularly on the deed side, because it's unlikely that the SG data would be incorrect with respect to the extent. So we took those. But when it came to the SOEs, state-owned enterprises, what we started noticing was that the properties that we had in particularly were properties that were registered in the National Research Foundation. When you look at what are these properties, they were generally Northern Cape. Then you realize that, no, that is a square kilometer array. Then we excluded them. So, and But also the issue that we had was the moment you identify a property, you had to walk onto it and check what was there. We did not have the time to negotiate with all the various stakeholders that we had identified that owned these properties. For instance, we couldn't go to all municipalities, and we couldn't deploy people to say, go and look at that municipal property without talking to the owner of the property, the municipality concerned. So as a result, we had to exclude those properties, even though we had identified them as underutilized. There were properties that we had identified of the South African National Defense Force, and once we started talking to other departments, the SNDF said, listen, we're using some of these properties. They gave us a list, therefore we excluded them. Can you move? Then we had to conduct the physical verification. Because we did not have the capacity, we had to outsource that capacity. We had to appoint a service provider that did so. The actual physical verification happened between 11 February 2019 to 31 May 2019. Next slide. In terms of the desktop agricultural potential analysis, I won't read what we sought to do in the manner in which it is written here. I'll just summarize it to say all that we wanted was to know what is the capability or the potential of this specific farm. That exercise was done by our colleagues and in agriculture at the time, and maps were produced that told us what is the potential of each farm. As a result, it's just that we wouldn't show you this information here, but behind this presentation, we've got data that will give you a map per farm and what is its potential in terms of carrying capacity or can it be used for cultivation and so on. That is basically what we achieved with the desktop agricultural potential analysis. Next slide. Then we had to verify land restitution claim. I mean, the real purpose here was to say, at the end of the day, we're to draw a conclusion whether the land is available for redistribution or not. As a consequence of that, we then had to, as you see on the table on the left-hand side, we sought to establish the status of each claim so that we can come to a conclusion whether it is available or not. For instance, in situations where the claim had been dismissed, or claimants had opted for financial compensation, immediately the conclusion was, okay, this land is available, so we can use for redistribution, or there's no claim, it is available. But on any of these other things where the claim is lodged but not yet validated, or claims has been settled, the claimants have opted for land restoration, then we knew that it was not available, so we didn't touch those. Let's move to the next slide. Then we then had to ask our colleagues who are in different parts of the country to say, what do you know about these farms? What is there? You will find situations that even though there may not have been a lease at a time when you did the desktop analysis, but there was a lease, for instance, in progress. We had to know that. We had to know if there is someone using the property, even if they do not have official authority to do so. That's basically what we did through this. At the end of this exercise, we identified that a number of farms were occupied in various forms. When we say we're occupied, it's not necessarily physical occupation. There were instances where the property, though when you use satellite images, it appears vacant. When you walk onto it, suddenly there's livestock grazing. You don't know whose livestock they are because there are no physical structures on the ground. But certainly it is being used. We had to establish all those things. After realizing that there was a high state of occupation, we then came to a conclusion that there should be land rights inquiries conducted on those farms so that we could establish the circumstances under which they are used and whether or not they can be redistributed. Next slide. The committee here had asked for ownership status, when was the property acquired, and what is the land use. So what this light attempts to do is to tell, for instance, if you pick up the Eastern Cape, what is the extent of these farms that are in the Eastern Cape that are used for communal grazing, for instance? What is the extent of what is being used for crop production? So that is what we sought to do through this slide. But in addition to this slide, what we have is actually an Excel spreadsheet that will then show you per property and indicate what is summarized here. Then there was an issue about when did we acquire these farms. Minister had already dealt with that part to say, essentially what we're talking about here is land that was either administered by the former homelands or it was in transit from central government or from the South African Development Trust to the former homeland at the time they ceased to exist. So this is what it is. As a result, if you go to the registration dates, you are going to find that they were acquired between 1925 and 2019. And we have explained that when you see 2019, you see 2015, then you must know that that is probably unalienated state land, or it is land that has never been that had never been registered before, which has been registered recently. As a result of surveying, you may know that we've been surveying unsurveyed state land. As we survey it, we get it registered. So therefore, those recent dates would be those types of dates, because this is not land that has been recently acquired. The later registration date simply means it was surveyed, registered, and therefore it appears that it has just recently been registered. Can we move to the next slide? The active leases, the farms which has, Minister had indicated that the allocation started in February. Out of those allocations, these are the properties where actual leases have been signed. We have indicated that per local municipality, the actual number of properties and the extent of what has been allocated. Next slide. We were asked whether we've got the capacity to administer leases. The reality is that we do not have that capacity. The simple fact that is resulting in that is that originally our intention as this department was we would acquire land, keep it for a few years, get people trained, use it. They get assessed whether or not they are performing well. If they do, then it gets transferred to them. Of course, from 2009, we then abolished grants which gave freehold tenure to land reform beneficiaries. As a result, the state portfolio grew. So the growth of the state property portfolio was not accompanied with the growth in capacity. So as a consequence of that, we have had a mismatch of the capacity to manage versus the land that is coming in the hands of the state. Because in addition to the land that you're talking about, you know that there's plus land that continues to grow in the hands of the state that must be managed by the same numbers of people. And as members would appreciate, the economic situation in the country does not allow that the state can increase its capacity. So therefore, it will not be realistic to expect that we are going to have that capacity at any point in the near future. Our expectation is that as we do policy changes, as we reintroduce grants, because there's an intention to do so, therefore we are going to see a lot of land moving to land reform beneficiaries in freehold, specifically to those that demonstrate the capacity to be able to properly utilize that land. And when that happens, it will then recreate the balance between the state capacity to manage since the land will be moving to land reform beneficiaries in freehold, which they will then manage themselves. So that is what we are looking at as a possibility, because there just isn't money that the state will be able to acquire as much capacity in relation to as much land that will be coming to the hands of the state. Next slide. This slide seeks to reflect the progress with respect to what has been released since February up to now. Those are the numbers in terms of hectares, in terms of women, in terms of youth and persons with disability. With respect to the numbers in relation to women, youth and persons with disability, the issue there is that because the allocations that happened, particularly between February and now, those were allocations in relation to people that were already in occupation. Now, the gender, age, the position of those persons influenced who got allocated. So if there were no women, there were simply no women, there was not enough youth, there were no persons with disability. But we are hoping that through the land that has been advertised, we are going to make some inroads in relation to the target group that we have identified. Next slide, please. We asked about the costing in relation to infrastructure and development. Part of what we have done in relation to these farms is that we have sent some agricultural engineers to specifically look at the farm, look at existing infrastructure, look at what it can be used for, and then make an assessment as to what would be required to either put this farm back into production, or what will be the minimum support that can be provided to get it into production, since we might not have all the money to accommodate every need that may be identified. So that work is currently being done, and we are hoping that by the end of this financial year, we'll have a better sense of how much will be required, and therefore that information will start getting fed into the budget of the department going forward. That's the end of the presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Masibulele kakhulu, Advocate Mgwengwe, and Ntate Ndove, and Honorable Minister Umama Titiza, for the presentation. Honorable members, we will now take questions for clarity and comments you may have on the presentation put before us by the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. Honorable Klappe, you may go ahead.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me welcome the presentation, and I take that this is the progress report. It's only the start. We will continue to get briefings as and when it's necessary. So I just want to find out from our first presenter, Ntate Ndove, based on what you received electronically and manual, the applications, what is the status versus what you have advertised, the number of hectares? Are you going to make it, or is the applications oversubscribed, for an example, or is it lower than the number of hectares that are advertised, and what will be your take either in the less applications or more applications, or what will be the plans of the department moving forward in this regard? For the advocate, Chair, There's a slide that indicates on the special analysis. They couldn't identify what is vacant or underutilized. Let's talk about the underutilized, for an example, the definition that you had to define in everything. Did you, as a department, consider the reasons that may cause underutilization? And I'm asking this, Chair, because for the past few years, there's a point where he touched to say from 10209 grants were scrapped. You find still people who has been restituted or has had a redistribution of land or allocation of land sitting there without any assistance in terms of a recapitalization or what. And this causes, for some reason, underutilization. And I wonder what will be the department's take there when you say this is underutilized, the person has been on this land without any assistance or anything, or how can you explain them to have performed? What is your take on that one? My last question is, the advocate indicates also that they don't have capacity to administer leases. This is a concern, Chairperson. What is the role of provinces, Mara, in like, or what is it that they need to do if we have to be, I know that most of the time we'd say some issues, some matters are performed by provinces and everything. What will it take provinces to have capacity? Now, this is the second matter. We're having CPAs that they don't have capacity to monitor, to play oversight on. Again, there's no capacity to monitor the leases. What is it that we need to do as national to make sure that down in the provinces, capacity is being built? Is it shortage of staff, physical, human, or is it this issue that we don't have the ICT that at the press of a button we can know what is happening? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mayor Kappe. Honorable Kappe.
Thank you, Chair. A few ones. One, there's been much of a mention of target groups, and now I just want to get some clarity on what is said or what is a plan for the number of people whom I think all of us, we know they exist in these rural communities, where one person or one farmer, or not a farmer maybe in the conventional sense, would be in a situation where they have a large number of livestock, where there's no farm, they only graze in communal grazing, and it usually is not enough for livestock. You know that during the time of Matanzima, that would be regarded as overstocking, that they could get rid of that stock. But in this case, they need to farm. And most of these people are struggling to get where they can farm with their livestock in huge numbers. Secondly, this question is linked to what Honorable Tapp has just been saying, because I also wanted the clarity of this vacant and underutilized land. But mainly on this part, what I also wanted to understand, that are there any indications that there is a progress being made in optimizing this utilization, this underutilization of land? Because this has been there for quite some time. We're counting years now. But if you go to many parts of our country, you'll find that the land that has been lying fallow, it remains lying fallow, or it has even increased. Not unless then I'm told that, no, that is not part of this program. Thirdly, on slide 5, the target groups. I wish there that those target groups, there is a way of prioritizing them, because in my understanding, the farm workers and the farm dwellers, and then the labor tenants, are likely to be the most vulnerable and the immediate targets there, where you find them in a situation where under that relationship they have with the farmers. Because to be honest, that master and servant relation still exists there, which are close to slavery, if you care to know. And that is the real situation which many farmers don't want us to talk about. And also now on slide 8, they talk about the interviews. I just need some clarity there. It doesn't seem that the interviews, when will they be concluded in that process? There's no mention of them being concluded because we have talked about time frames. And also on the approach and methods, that's where also I was expecting to hear some time frames. Lastly, just a clarity also, because there may be a reason for this, that in that table, there is absence of the entire former Cape Province. That is Western Cape, Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, whatever. But the entire Cape Province is not reflected there. What may be the reason? What is happening? Or is there any way that this in this table, this allocation, they are catered for? I thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mthembu Mkhulu. The Honourable Mama Steyn.
Thank you, Chairperson. Firstly, thank you for organizing this meeting. I think it is over time that we are a meeting regarding this, Chairperson, because there's lots of interest out there. Chair, my first question would be to the department. Thank you for the information that we received. But most of the concerns that we are receiving, or myself am receiving, is not linked to, it sounds like, the state land leases. I have received a letter from a farmer in the Western Cape, one in Gauteng and then others in Mpumalanga, who has been on the land for years, but received letters to vacate the land in the last year. So mostly during the second half of 2019, beginning of 2020. Specifically, the farmer in Gauteng has received a letter to say that he will get a renewal of his farmland. So it's interesting to see today, Chairperson, that some farmers received leases already in the different provinces. So if the minister or the officials can maybe indicate to us, outside of the process of the lease of the state land, the other farmers that's been on land and have been sitting without leases or valid leases since 2016, which was the last time the majority of these leases were renewed. Is that process ongoing, or what is the process with that? Then, Chairperson, just on the question of moving to freehold, I think we need a specific answer on the process of how the leases will be handled if the department admits that they don't have the capacity, because I think that is what happened when most of the farmers were sitting without valid lease agreements for the last few years, and that could have also led to challenges that they could not move forward. So if we can just get some kind of clarity of the moving towards freehold, would any of the farmers be allowed to then use the option to purchase at this time? And what would be the price that they pay? Would it be the price that farmland go in that area, or will there be some kind of a reduced price that farmers can buy the land for? Because I actually think that's a very good idea that we do that. Then, Chairperson, I haven't seen the definition of vacant land or partially vacant land. And I must say, I'm really very concerned that some of the work was supposed to be done by outsourcing. You know, Chair, that I've been quite adamant that I want to know which of the departmental officials worked during the COVID period. So I'm concerned, Chair, that we had to outsource this in a time that I'm sure a lot of the officials could have been assisting during this time. So who was this work outsourced to? Who is the company or the people that did the work? Can we find out about that? Then, Chairperson, who sits on these screening committees? Because some of the concerns that I've received previously, and that has got to do with the people that already received leases on land that apparently is not part of the state land process, as I can find out today, that people said a committee sat and some people under very similar conditions next to each other on farms, one lot received leases and the others didn't. And it was obviously also done by this screening committee. So can we find out as a committee exactly who sits on these screening committees and whether the people that sit on the screening committees have some experience in farming? And then it was mentioned that the appeals committee would be independent. So if we can also find out who will be on the appeal committee. And then lastly, Chairperson, the budget. I see that the budget that will assist the farmers will only be during the 2021 next year's budget. Do we have some kind of idea of what budget will be needed? Because if we cannot support these farmers, we're going to set them up for failure. And we need to get that clarified as soon as possible as to then go and make sure that other institutions will be able to assist the farmers. But thank you again, Chair, for this presentation. I think it was really long overdue. Thanks.
Chairperson,
you are
muted.
Oh, I said honorable. Thank you, honorable minister. Honorable Matthias. He doesn't seem to be on the platform from what I see. So we'll move on unless he comes on. We'll recognize him then. Honorable Marshall.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. Chairperson, let me welcome the presentation made by the department and also greetings to all members of the portfolio committee present, including ministers and deputy ministers if they're present. Chairperson, I have been listening on the presentations of which I think one will go directly to the presentation made by Ntate Ndobe, where he was talking about application received for verification, which will be done on the 9th. I don't know if I heard him clearly. And then he was also talking about the interviews that will be done on the 14th of January 2021. I just wanted to check on that. Taking into consideration, Chairperson, that our own people in South Africa did not have, most of them don't have what it takes in that document. The outside documents, on the outside of that application, it has lots and big documents that part of our communities might not be able to have. And are we, how do we then make sure that our people in South Africa, especially Black people in South Africa, because they don't have most of those documents that are there, what did the department do to assist those people to have a part of those documents? I will give you an example, Chairperson. They are saying they are looking for tobacco certificate. They are looking for abortion certificate, something of that sort, which when you go to the pharmacist in Polokwane, they will tell you it's plus minus 52,000 rand to get that certificate for you to get it, for them to come and do the work in the farm so that you can get that certificate. So how certain it is that the department is certain that Black people will get the land? Or are we saying the land should go back to those that were oppressing us even long ago? The second question, Chairperson, will be about the state land that is abandoned. For example, if you come to Limpopo in Lephalale district, you will find a farm by the name of Sterk Loop, 300 LR, which is one of the farms that I visited. It's a farmland. I mean, it's a state land from 1925, if you check the documents of the government. But this farm is being abandoned. It's not being taken care of by anybody in government. Instead, the individual community members, they give themselves this land and they lease the farm out and make money out of it without the...
You are no longer audible, Honorable Marshall. Honorable Briet.
Thank you so much, Chairperson. I will try to be quick. Chairperson, just speaking of the database that the DDG spoke of, instead of using a spreadsheet, I would like to find out who implemented it. Did they get an outside company to set it up or to write the program? Was it in-house? What was the cost in terms of that? Can it be used for our other programs? We mentioned that there was problems and they used a spreadsheet for the COVID relief. Will it be able to be patented for the others? And can it be linked to the other databases? I think Honorable Marshall and my other colleagues actually mentioned that to ensure that there's no double dipping and to see who has already received what, I think that would be good to actually have these databases linked at the end of the day. To get to the application process, I know the DDG said they were still in the process of it, but does he already have some figures in terms of the online versus the manual, whether there were doubles that were actually double applications, and how much did that amount for of the 38,000 applications that were received? Also then maybe what happens when there are more requests than there is necessarily land? Will the department go out and actually acquire some more land? I think then maybe as well, I can just add to, I think it was Honorable Steyn that said that I am quite worried about the lease structure and the way we are going to do that. I don't think I'm going to add questions. She was quite thorough in terms of that. My opinion, and after the day we've had, I think that title deeds and ownership is at the end of the day what we need to strive for, specifically taking into account land reform, and that we would like to see success in that, and give previously disadvantaged people land, but also, you know, to keep that balance and to not have them reliant on the state. How far are we on that? Then maybe just talk to the appeals chairperson in terms of when will those appeals open, how will those appeals work, and what time frame are we looking at in terms of that, so that we do not see that process, as with other appeals processes in different other government departments, taking really beyond the necessary lifetime, almost, I want to say, of those things. And then the second thing, in terms of staff, we've spoken about the understaffing of that. I know we've seen in some of our oversight visits, we have quite a number of corruption going down to our lower levels, our, for lack of a better word, our extension office level almost. How will we ensure that we do not see corruption, we do not see bribes going in terms of, you know, I'll allow your application to pass, but you need to give me a kickback. Well, how are we going to ensure that? And also, we've got quite a number of structures dealing with land reform. Is there a way that we can consolidate, that we can actually have our different structures and talk to one another, actually assist one another to see to it that we are not understaffed, and that we can optimally use our staff in the department? And then maybe a last question, Chairperson. I see no state land is allocated for redistribution in the Western Cape and Gauteng. And maybe if the, maybe I missed that, if they can just clarify, in terms of that, is it because there is not, did they not receive applications? If they did receive applications, how will they handle that? Chairperson, and that is all from my side. Thanks. Chairperson, you are muted.
Thank you, Akbar Priyad. Honorable Babama.
Thank you very much, Chair. I will beg your indulgence. I will not switch on my video. I'm having a bit of a problem. As a result, ndingene seyisegqibeleni lenantsika le presentation. And I'm really sorry for that, because this is highly important. As a result, I have only one question, Chair. And it is around the issue. I'll make an example of an area that I know very well, and that is Gwagyu, in the Queenstown area, where we noticed that amongst the farms that were advertised, the farms of Gwagyu are also included in those farms. And I've quickly gone through the presentation, and I see that there is some kind of explanation around why are farms that are being processed through other programs, why are they included in these farms? And the answer that I got was that it was for transparency. But unfortunately, this kind of transparency, where we advertise farms that are being processed in other programs, is causing anxiety amongst the people on the ground. And I'm talking on a live example of Gwagyu. The people there are anxious about why is our farm now, why are these farms now being advertised? And I'm sure that Gwagyu is not the only case. And I would also echo Honorable Steyn's words, where she says, what is the definition for vacant and partly vacant? And I'm sure, Chair, we will have a lot of questions going forward, because I hope that we will be given these periodical reports. My colleagues have raised extremely, extremely, extremely important things, especially somebody, to make an example, like Mefro Briet right now. She has just said that there are so many stumbling blocks. There are so many lessons from past programs that you could bring on to in terms of training, in terms of ensuring that people get support and all of those good things. How is the department making sure that lessons learned from previous initiatives will not be affected here? And the biggest one, of course, as usual, will be corruption. Ngiyabulela Madiba.
Nkosi Khangepa. Honorable Memahlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chair. Can I also request, Slalo, that I do not switch on the video. The network is quite bad.
Okay, please go ahead.
Afternoon, colleagues, afternoon to Minister, Honorable Minister and Deputy Ministers, as well as officials of the Department. Chairperson, I would like to start with the policy issues. The presentation does indicate that actually the Department has policy imperatives in as far as land reform is concerned. Firstly, it was the state land leases. Secondly, it was the state disposal policy. Now we're dealing with the beneficiary selection and land allocation. I just want to understand whether does this new way or the national policy, does it incorporate the two, or will they be running concurrently? That's my first question. Number two, on the presentation, Chair, on release of farms, we must indeed appreciate the significance in terms of women achievement for the allocation of 58% of farms to women. But I must indicate I'm still concerned with the allocation for persons with disabilities. I don't think 0.3% is significant. It's just a drop in an ocean. And we ought to have some significant work done in that particular space, given that we are dealing with a very important sector of our community. Thirdly, Chair, is on the support of beneficiaries. I would like to hear from the department what type of support are they going to give to beneficiaries. Indeed, there is in the presentation a element on support, but we're not specific in terms of what type of support, how much will, because I'm asking this question precisely because of the constraints that government has financially, and whether if they're going to have training, whether it will be accredited training, and whether it will be budgeted for in the 2021-2022 financial year, because we're working towards that particular financial year. On selection processes, Chair, I want to find out from the department, the selection process, especially with capacity of the district, how will they handle that? Because we have seen during the COVID-19 processes where districts and provinces were given responsibility to deal with the process of selection. Do they have the necessary capacity to deal with this particular process? And has the department at national level prepared these particular offices or these particular offices being the province and district to be able to handle the magnitude of the work that is expected out of them, out of this process? On the distribution, I would like to echo words of Honorable Breed on the Western Cape and Gauteng to say why are they not allocated? Why has not been worked and why was that? Maybe it's advert or anything of that sort, but maybe if we can get clarity. Lastly, Chair, on the desktop spatial analysis, I want to check how accurate was the process? Can we quantify or verify that this process was accurate and this is the land we have? And what was the consultation processes with provinces and districts for farm assessment, because that will speak to budget allocation and the training that is necessary. The part on the desktop spatial analysis is also around what I think is advocate who spoke about the capacity required to administer leases. The fact that the department does not have capacity and is illustrated in the presentation earlier that there is no capacity. How do they intend to run with this process if indeed there is no capacity to administer leases? What then is going to be done? Because they're speaking about the capability of
individuals who will be able to show that they've got capacity to run the farms, therefore the farms will therefore be handed over. But between now and then, given that our people do not have the necessary training, they will be trained towards that particular process of them being able to keep, to be able to run these farms effectively and efficiently. What then becomes, how will they manage this process if they do not have capacity to administer leases? Because I'm worried about this particular element, Chair, because if they're going to allocate and hand over at some point to those who are capable, that's where monopoly comes in, that those who are able to manage, those who've got money to be able to run these farms will be the only ones who will be able to get farms. So that on its own, it opens gap for manipulation. Therefore, I would want us, the department, to look at those loopholes and try by all means to ensure that all South Africans who are qualifying to become beneficiaries do so without any prejudice based on the financial capacity. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Memahlatsi. Honorable Montwedi. Dr. Montwedi. I also didn't see him on the platform earlier when I checked. Honorable Masipa. Dr. Masipa Dume.
Akbar Mandela, 100. Thank you for the opportunity, Chairperson. I think I just want to really focus on two things. One is obviously the issue that was raised by Metlape. This pertains to the capacity and, you know, the issue is that I'm picking up is that the department does not have capacity. And obviously, you know, we have got the provinces that are able and that are obviously already providing support to many of these farmers. Why is the department not using the capacity that is within the province in order to enhance or to speed up this particular process? And obviously, Minister, in our presence, this issue, we raised it, you know, earlier when you took over the department, and obviously, you know, it was still in early days, but the issue of ensuring that the land reform and the Department of Agriculture in the province are working together to ensure that, you know, the delivery of the programs are smoother. You know, there is a relationship of capacitating from agriculture that comes onto this farm from the Department of Agriculture. Let's just look at the program of CASP. From a program of CASP, there's obviously they have got the database of the farmers that they've been assisting or the land that they've been supporting, and they have got the knowledge and they have got the understanding. But you also have got a land care program that is running from the Department of Agriculture. Through that land care program, surely I'm sure that they are touching all over the provinces and they understand what is going on in many of these farms. So the question is for the DDG and obviously the minister is why can't the capacity in the province be utilized to ensure that we achieve greater success? The other issue that I have got is around the, which is the second one, the people that are reporting to the old land reform structure and rural development. What is their function really in the province? I just want to know what is it that they are doing after they have, call it adjudicated, given the farms to those needy individuals. What role do they play in terms of ensuring that they understand what is going on those particular farms? Because a number of times when we start asking the questions from the department as to what is the productivity level of this farm? What is the situation with the farms? You find that the people from the officials from the old defunct land reform and rural development, they know nothing as to what's happening. So, Chair, that's my real question to the presenters, to the department. I thank you very much. Akbar Mandela.
Thank you, Akbar Masipa. Honorable members, are there any other honorable members that I have not recognized who wished to pose a question? If not, honorable members, let me also take this opportunity to welcome the presentation. And I would also have maybe two, three questions that I'd like clarity on. But before doing so, I perhaps want to take a step back, particularly from the minister's opening address, in this 700,000 hectares of land that was pronounced by the president. And the department is now in the process of allocating. I would want to gain clarity in the first 400,000 hectares of land that the president had spoken to and that had been disposed. It's not part of this current allocation we are speaking to. And secondly, also can I gain clarity on the 546,000 hectares of land that the minister also proclaimed on putting to the public for application? Is that what now falls under the 700,000 hectares of land? And if I'm to then come to the presentation as put to us, honorable members, there is 1,400, rather, let me get this one correctly, 14,000 hectares that have been encumbered. In terms of farm units, how many are these farms, and where are they located? And I'd also want to understand what types of farms are they. Further, can the department also explain what is meant by encumbered farms in the context of state land allocation projects? Second, would be amongst the project goals, it is contribution towards economic growth by creating jobs, reducing poverty and inequality. In your own analysis as presenters of the department, how does the project, or how was the project conceptualized? And more in particular, how many jobs will this project create? If us, honorable members, as a portfolio committee on agriculture, land reform and rural development, was to measure the success of this project with regards to reducing poverty and inequality, what are the project indicators that this committee must focus on? In terms of the receipt, which equals a 16,000 applications that have been submitted, can the department inform the portfolio committee on the timeframes for completion of this screening process? Honorable members, the committee actually wanted to know when the farms were acquired. However, the presentation on this matter was so general and broad. We had hoped that the department with the deeds registries would be able to give us some information. In terms of the target groups, honorable members, we are concerned that we are unable to see the four categories of farmers as provided in the state land lease and disposal policy. Can this be explained as to who are the targeted groups and how are they located in terms of these categories of farmers? I thank you. Honorable Minister, Advocate Mgwengwe and Boundove, please proceed.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and as well as members of the Portfolio Committee, Deputy Ministers and Senior Officials. And we'd like to thank the inputs, proposals, as well as questions that have been raised. Just to start on the issues that you've raised, Honorable Chair, with respect to the 14,000 hectares that was announced by the President last year, those pieces of land were for human settlement purposes. So they had already been through the process of public works and human settlement in the process of actually transferring those for human settlement to actually develop them into housing units. In some of them, you have informal settlements. So those 14,000 pieces of land were not for agricultural purposes. In terms of the 300,000 hectares, which actually, when we looked at them, was for restitution purposes, they therefore never formed part of 700,000 that we're talking about. So in our announcement, and I think as the two presenters indicated, since February after the announcement by the President, we started with actually the allocation of that state land. And that's where we talk about, you know, the 160 women who had benefited and others. It is on those that we already allocated. The remaining number was about 500 plus. I don't have my figures right in front of me. And that's what we're talking about now in terms of the allocation. There's a question that has been raised by yourself, Chairperson, in terms of the acquisition. As I gave the announcement in the beginning, and I'm sure the detail can be received or rather be made by the department in terms of exactly when, but all of these pieces of land were not bought post-1994. They were actually land that were acquired by the then National Party government and put under the South African Development Trust, which was the agency of the government at the time, for consolidation of homelands. Some of them were actually given out for agricultural use by the SADT. For instance, if you were to look at the land in Makatini Flats in KwaZulu-Natal, for instance, and some in other provinces that were part of the former homeland state or self-governing territories. So it is that land, it's not new land that has been acquired post-1994. As I said in one of the statements, actually is regularization of what was not completed in the past in terms of redistribution, which is now what we are doing. Some of the farmers who were put on that land were actually put by the then Homeland government working with the South African Development Trust. I want to also indicate that in terms of this program, we are indeed working with the province as we have worked with them in respect of COVID intervention, for instance. And this is what we've been trying to do with members of the executive councils in the provinces to ensure that there is, you know, alignment in the way in which we work and further support to those beneficiaries who would have received the land. But that doesn't mean we are actually saying we are not going to work also in looking at increased budget to support those who have received the land. And both the President and Deputy President, in their responses to Parliament and even publicly, they've committed government that we will support those farmers who received state land, not only these farmers, but also farmers who have received land through restitution or even your plus farms, as it were, before. There are other issues that have been raised, which I think members would actually, of the team, will respond to. But in terms of the target group, we've indicated that apart from women and youth, we also want to target farmers who are in communal areas, because we believe that some of those farmers have already grown to a point that they may not be able to utilize, you know, or rather grow their farming enterprise in the communal area. So those are also our target in this regard. I would then allow the members of the team, Chairperson, to respond on some of the details that you have asked, and I'm sure I will come at the end. Thank you very much.
Honorable Minister.
Just a second. Minister? Chair?
Yes, please proceed.
Yes. This is Deputy Minister of Culture.
So,
sorry I joined late, there were some technical problems. I did not get the presentation, but I think the issue of Gwagyu falls in the category that the minister just explained. I think that even when we made the announcement of the 1st of October, we did publicly acknowledge that some of the applications would be in farms that are occupied, that have never been regularized. So we also are using this process to make sure that we know who is in which farm and what kind of activities are going on in that particular farm. And therefore we regularize it so that we have an accurate database. So the issue of this is no intention to randomly evict people who are in these farms, but we do need to know whether they are actually doing what farms are supposed to do, and are they there on merit and so forth. I think that the minister has actually covered that point, but I just wanted to speak into, because Honorable Babama spoke into it. I hand over to the official chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Minister Squatcha, Deputy Minister Squatcha.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Oh, okay, Mr. Mgwengo want to speak? You can start.
Thank you, Chair. There was a question from Honorable Sape about whether we did consider the reasons for underutilization. Chair, let me say that will be a subject for another day. For purposes of this project, we did not. We're simply looking at whether the land appears to be underutilized or appears to be vacant. As to why it is not underutilized, for purpose of this project, we have not done so. But if the committee wants to put this as a general question that the department may have to answer, I think we can come back to the committee at another time, unless my colleague Didi Jindove is able to take that question. Minister has already answered the question of what is the role of provinces. But Honorable Tlhapi went deeper on the issue of the shortage of staff, on whether or not it is just the shortage, is it the issue of ICT capacity, of ICT, and so on, and what would it take to have capacity? Chair, let me just deal with this issue this way. Chair, this department, in the history of its life, even prior to democracy, it never really had land in large numbers as we do. It was only in 1995 when the State Land Disposal Act was amended to define the minister for purposes of the former homelands as the Minister of Land Affairs, that it then brought the entire land mass of the former homelands into this department. There was no capacity to manage. The people that were sitting in the former homelands that managed this land, they ended up in provincial governments. You will largely find them in the departments of agriculture or in the departments of cooperative governments in provinces right now. The Upgrading of Land Tenure Rights Act was amended in 1998 to provide for the movement of the former homeland capacity from the provincial governments to the National Department of Land Affairs at the time. That process appeared to have not been followed through. As a result, you still have that capacity in provinces. Some of it is idle. As a result, they get tempted to start managing this land because they have these people that whose function was to manage land. In fact, some of them are still defined that way in the Eastern Cape, in Limpopo. In KwaZulu-Natal, they were moved to the traditional affairs function. So I think that is where we lost it. It does not appear to have been an attempt, or if that attempt was made, it may not have succeeded, of implementing that section of ULTRA that sought to transfer that capacity to this department. So as we had mentioned many times before, when we inherited this land, part of it was actually productive agricultural land that was farmed by the South African Development Trust Corporation. When the department realized that it did not have capacity, in the year 2000, it entered into powers of attorney where the minister at the time entered into an agreement with provinces in terms of which provinces would manage this land. That happened. What then happened is that with the coming into operation of the Public Finance Management Act and the auditing of immovable assets of departments, we started having issues about the land that was being administered by provinces on behalf of this department. It got to a point where a decision was made in September 2009 to terminate the powers of attorney that had allowed provincial governments to manage agricultural state land. Then the whole mass of that land came back to this department. Of course, was met with the shortage of capacity that was there. Then came plus land. So that's really the history that has got us into this position where there is a mismatch between the portfolio and capacity. We've been trying to address it over years, creating that capacity, but the financial situation in the country doesn't allow that to happen anymore. I'm hoping that I've now provided sufficient information to deal with the issue of capacity. In terms of IT, let me admit that we may not be at a level where you can just sit in an office anywhere in the country and press a button and see what is going on. But we are at a level where our officials who manage land, they have access to a land-based website that we manage. where they are able to identify any land parcel of our own. They can produce maps on the basis of the systems that we have developed. But at the end, if you manage an asset, you've got to be on site. You've got to know when occupation changes on the ground. If you are unable to be in every corner of your property, then you have a problem. And that's the problem that we are admitting that we had, which we're saying over time, we're going to reach that balance because we appreciate that at the end, we've got to place the responsibility of land management to the farmer that is farming that land. And for that reason, we need to get to a point also as part of helping our people to have their own assets. We've got to get to a point where they hold this land in freehold. Indeed, there was a question about whether what is going to happen with those that have got leases. Indeed, our policy as it stands now, it provides for leases with option to purchase. So it is envisaged that lessees will exercise that option and therefore land ownership will move from the state to the farmer's consent. I hope I've dealt with the questions of Honorable Chape. The minister has already dealt with the question of the of communal farmers who have got more livestock than land available that they can make use of. There was a question about the target group, whether we wouldn't want to reprioritize so as to prioritize farm dwellers. Chair, indeed, in terms of the policy that we have developed, which is just before cabinet right now, farm dwellers are part of our target group. We indeed want to do so. So they'll be addressed as part of the implementation of that policy. On the question of the absence of the Cape provinces in the table for land allocation, Chair, at the time the pre-advertisements allocations were done, the Eastern Cape had not done allocations at that stage. The Western Cape, none of the Western Cape was under a former homeland, therefore that is why they do not have farms that are in the Western Cape as part of this project. As we have consistently indicated, this land is essentially land that was in the former homelands, or it's land that was in close proximity to the former homelands, which was in transit to the former homelands at the time democracy came. So that's the reason for the absence of the Western Cape. With respect to the Northern Cape, there were no allocations at that stage because most of the land that you find in the Northern Cape, for instance, that is part of this project, it's land that was in the Bophuthatswana, which had been allocated to some farmers. There've been a number of disputes that were still sorting, as a consequence of which the allocation had not happened at the time the original allocation happened. That part of that land has now been advertised, so it will be dealt with as part of this process. So that is why you don't see it in the allocations that happened from February. There was a question about farmers now from Honorable Stain about farmers that were without leases since about 2016, and the question was whether the process of getting leases to those farmers is ongoing. The response to that, Honorable Stain, is that part of the land that we allocated since February is the land where farmers were already in occupation. It is these farmers that you say have been without leases since 2016. Let me deal with the issue of 2016. What had happened is that in 2013, this department approved a policy that provided for 30-year leases with option to purchase. It provided for the rental determination formula, which required a farmer to produce a business plan that will then identify an estimated annual net income of 5%, because that is what the rental was. The rental was a projected annual net income of 5%. So what then happened is that farmers had a difficulty in terms of developing business plans. The department sought to help them, but the procurement process for doing so, it took so long that we had to reconsider the rental determination formula. So that's when the amendments started. So the leases that were signed, particularly from 2016, they were based on that 2013 policy. We then reviewed the rental determination formula, which is what it is now, which is basically a percentage, which is basically now 1% of the value of the property. Because we wanted to move away from a position where we will have to appoint service providers, we'll have to get farmers to do what they became unable to do to develop business plans. That policy was approved in 2019. Because of those changes and the fact that farmers were unable to comply with the old policy, it then created a backlog in terms of the conclusion of leases. So those farmers, as I've already said, they were addressed between February and now. And some of those farmers are on these farms that members have raised concern about, where there are farmers who are on the farms, but the farm has been advertised, which we have said we have no intention of removing them. Where those farmers exist, we will get a land rights inquiry done, confirm their situation, and then conclude those leases. So that is what we intend to do. So therefore, a short answer to Honorable Steyn on this one is that indeed that process of getting leases signed for those farmers, it indeed is ongoing. There was a question about who was the physical verification outsourced to. It was outsourced to a company called Enziga Consulting. As members would appreciate, in August, the IMC gets set up. By August, the IMC undertakes this project. It wants farms that are underutilized or vacant identified. And that has to happen particularly between August and the end of that financial year, because by the beginning of the financial year in 2019-20, announcements must be made with respect to what is going to happen with respect to this project. So we then had to get people quickly that could go out and perform this work. We did not have sufficient numbers inside the department. In fact, what we did a variation of scope in an existing contract that the department had, because this company was already performing assessments of PLUS farms at that time. We simply did a variation of scope so that they could do this work quickly, so that we can have a sense as to what was going on in this farm. So that is how we got into this outsourcing business. The question of who sits on the screening committees, DDG is going to deal with that question. On the issue of whether we have an idea as to how much support budget will be needed, the reality is that we don't have a figure. What we've done though is that our colleagues in food security have developed a startup support package that basically says, if you are a livestock farmer, what should we give you as a startup so that you are able to commence with your farming business? If you are into crops, what should be the startup? That package has been developed. I'm not sure whether it has been costed now in terms of if you were to give a farmer that startup tomorrow, what will it cost the department? I'm uncertain whether that has been done. But in addition to that startup package, as I had indicated before, our agricultural engineers have already been on specific farms to look at the needs of those infrastructural needs of those farms so that we are able to produce a cost. We may not be able to give you that cost in this meeting now, but that information exists with respect to a few provinces. I know for a fact that a province like Limpopo is about to be completed with respect to that. So with respect to those provinces where this work has been done, we should be able to say this is a ballpark figure of what we think might be required. But we are not able to give you that information in this meeting now. With respect to the question from Honorable Marshall about Sterkloop 300LR, this is one of the farms that we had identified for this project at the beginning. So I know that it has not yet been advertised. The chances are that there may be issues relating to it, which I will have to establish from colleagues as to what could be the issue around it. But it was part of the original list. In fact, there are two portions of this farm that was part of the original list. With respect to Honorable Briette about why no state land in GP and Western Cape, the vacant or underutilized land that we had identified in Gauteng, for instance, it was just 929 hectares. That was allocated during the process that started in February, March. Therefore, they don't have anything anymore to allocate. I'd already dealt with the question with respect to the Western Cape. This none of the of it was simply under homeland. Therefore, they did not have this type of land. With respect to Honorable Mbabama, Deputy Minister Squacha has already gone into the issue about Kwacha. There is this question about what is the definition of vacant land. I had attempted to partly answer that through the parameters that we had developed. Let me attempt to do so again. As part of the desktop exercise, we had to obtain data on land capability or suitable terrain from our colleagues in agriculture. We had to obtain data on indigenous forests, specifically indigenous forest inventory, South African Protected Areas Database, the national land cover from our colleagues in the National Geospatial Information. On the basis of that information, I'm not going to go to the other data sources because they are not relevant to particularly this question. On the basis of that information, we were able to say this particular farm is located on a suitable terrain. But if you look at the satellite images, you can see that there is no farming taking place. Purely on those bases, we would then conclude that that land is underutilized. Or we would look at a property and identify that it is not located in a suitable terrain. It is located in a rocky place. Therefore, it is not just underutilized. It is simply that it cannot be utilized for farming. And therefore, on that basis, we'll draw a conclusion. So that is how we use this data to come to conclusions about what appears to be underutilized or what appears to be vacant. So as I had said as well, we would look at a farm and say, this farm is in an indigenous forest, but about 90% of it is outside of the forest, And it appears, if you look at satellite images, that it is not being farmed. On that basis, we'll then say it is underutilized, and therefore we include it in this exercise. That is basically how we used the spatial analysis to come to a conclusion as to what was vacant or what was underutilized. There was a question from Honorable Mahlatsi about whether the policy or whether the national beneficiary selection and land allocation policy and the state land lease and disposal policy are going to be existing side by side, or some aspects of the other might be incorporated in the other. Chair, let me answer it this way. When the IMC started dealing with this work, part of the concerns that were being raised with members of the IMC by members of the public was that we are unclear about what type of person gets allocated a farm by this department. Then the IMC firm took a view that it had to develop some kind of criteria that would be used in allocating the land that had been identified. As a consequence of that, the National Land Beneficiary Selection and Land Allocation the Beneficiary Selection and Land Allocation Policy was then developed as a response to that concern. So therefore, it does incorporate some aspects of land allocation criteria that is provided for in the state land lease and disposal policy. But because we couldn't wait until the policy was approved by cabinet and so on, we had to kind of, before the policy is approved, try to match some aspects of this policy with the current policy so that we have a basis for selection and allocation. But the intention is that once that policy comes into operation, the aspects of the state land lease and disposal policy that deal with land allocation will be repealed, or I'll use the word repealed, though not necessarily in a technical repeal sense in relation to legislation. So those aspects will be removed from the state land lease and disposal policy so that land allocation is governed by one policy in this department. So that is how we intend to deal with it. On the issue of support that will be given to beneficiaries, Honorable Mahlatsi, that part we have already dealt with it. There was a question about how accurate was the process. What was the consultation process with provinces and districts on the desktop agricultural analysis? Yes, the minister has answered this question with respect to the general cooperation between the department and provincial governments. But with respect to the agricultural analysis, the desktop assessment, that desktop assessment was done by our colleagues at agriculture at the time in the national government. It was not done in conjunction with provinces. So there wasn't any kind of consultation with respect to that. In any event, we did not consider that there was a need for consultation because it was a matter of using existing information, which is either that or not. So it was not an issue that could be resolved through any kind of discussion with the others. But at a general level, there is cooperation. We act together. Issues relating to this project, they go to MINTEC, they go to MINMEC. So we are dealing with these issues together. The issue of capacity, I already attempted to deal with that, Honorable Mahlatsi. I hope that I've satisfied your requirements with respect to it. On the issue of the possibility of monopolies in relation to freehold tenure that will be given to farmers that show that they succeed, what we haven't mentioned for purpose of this presentation is that as part of this project, we have a training program that is being developed. In fact, it is just that we couldn't wait until all the farmers have been trained. But what we're going to be doing is that all the farmers that will be part of this program, their training needs will be identified, training will be provided. So therefore, when we reach a stage where people have to exercise their option to purchase, it is not really going to depend on whether or not you've got resources and therefore you can find your business and therefore you get given the land. No, it will be based on your capacity to farm at whatever scale of farming you are. And having been assisted with training that will be provided by this department together with its entities and provincial governments where necessary. So it's just that we did not get into the details about the training aspect of this project because the request for the presentation did not lead us that way. Otherwise, there is that aspect, details of which can be provided in future in the event that members would want to be properly briefed on it. Honorable Basipa, I will not respond to the question of capacity because I think I've done so, but if it is not to your satisfaction, you can come back to it, then we can deal with it. There was an issue raised by Honorable Basipa that I'm unable to answer. The issue was, what is the capacity of the old DRDLR capacity and what are they doing in relation to allocated farms? The concern that was being raised is that, for instance, you would want to know what is the productivity level on some of the allocated farms, and we would not be able to answer that. Indeed, I'm not better qualified to answer it, but what I can in summary say is that at the time when we ran the recurrent development program, the question of productivity was dealt with under that program. And you may know that we now have the land development support, which also intends to deal with those types of situations. So our colleagues that deal with that, I'm sure they should be able to answer in substantive details as to what is going to happen to allocated farms. We've already said we shall provide them with training. We make an assessment in terms of infrastructural needs. And we're looking at startup packages, but I'm saying a comprehensive presentation could be provided with respect to that, should the committee wish to have that specifically going forward. The minister has answered a lot of the questions from the honorable chair. Chair, on the issue of the farms, when were the farms acquired? Chair, what we have done is that when the presentation was provided, we have also given you an Excel spreadsheet. The truth, Chair, is that we have 896 farms in that spreadsheet. So if we had put them in this presentation, I'm sure you would have been irritated with us by the time that we finished, because it would have been very long. But that information exists, Chair. I believe that it is available to members of the committee because it would have been distributed together with the presentation. So there will be a column in that in that spreadsheet chair that shows you registration dates of each one of those properties. So therefore, that information is there, chair. You can have a look at it. It's just that it couldn't be summarized in a presentation because it is quite large information. I think I've answered the questions that I could, and my colleague can get into those that I didn't. Thank you.
Bamgwengwe, sibambangazo zombini. Baundova.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Let me once again thank my colleague, and also thank the Deputy Minister and the Minister for assisting us in responding to the questions. I think most of the questions have been addressed, but there are areas that have been left, and I'll briefly go through that. But I need just to explain something for the benefit of the honorable members, that in the development of the plan for this intervention, it was a process that was very consultative. We have engaged with provinces. We have engaged even with non-governmental organizations. We have gone through Minimax. There was, and not one, several plans were draft plans were presented before them, and later on we have to revise them in line with the input that were coming from various stakeholders. We have also gone through the IMC through this program, the plan, just to ensure that indeed it's a plan that is credible. So there has been consultation. And in the process, we have learned also from the other programs that we've done in terms of the challenges that we have. And in this program, we try to improve on those ones. If I may just start with the issue related to the number of applications. We have just over 36,000 that we have. Whether they are too little or too much, I think it is very clear that we have got huge numbers compared to the land we have. And the answer, the question would be, as asked, what will we do in that situation? Definitely, if we use the word oversubscribed, as that was used by Honorable Tlape, yes, there has been more application than the land we have. However, this program is not the only program that is able to afford people to access land. As a department, we are working around to also get other programs to also complement this program to ensure that those who may not necessarily fit where it is possible, they will be fitted into some other programs. That is being developed, I think, at an appropriate time. We'll be able to present a clear plan in that regard. But we have taken note of that, and it's a discussion that is going on to ensure that that happens, to address the oversubscribing as defined by Honorable Club. The underutilized land, I'm not going to get into the details, but I can explain the underutilization in various forms. One is either, as we have indicated, that the allocation did not happen properly during its historic. So there could have been people that have been given land, and over time, maybe those who were active in the land passed on or decided not to continue to farm, and the land get underutilized. It could be the land is too big for their capacity. Of course, the issue of support from government is also one of the factors. So there may be many factors that can be described, that can be associated with the underutilization of land. And part of this initiative, this project, is to address that. Where we could be able to determine that some people have got bigger land that they cannot manage because of their own limited capacity, obviously we'll see how best we can utilize that land even including considering subdividing it where possible, but not arbitrarily, but using a scientific understanding of the resources within that land and the capacity of the farmer. And having done those studies, we can be able to, you know, subdivide so that there can be optimal utilization of that land. I'm just giving that as one of the examples. The next one talks to issues related to who sits in the screening committee. However, in the subsequent questions, there's also a question of who sits in the appeals committee. So what I'll do, I'll just briefly give a picture of the people that are actually sit, I mean, how the committee are constituted, just for the privilege of the committee. Like I indicated that this was a process that was consultative. We have national departments that are participating in the three structures that we spoke about. The district, provincial, as well as national. Normally, the national departments will be sitting more in the national committee. We have got also the office of the premier participating much on the level of the provinces. We have got provincial departments. We also have got municipalities from the level of government participating on the district committees. Apart from that, as I indicated in my presentation, that we have gone out to also work together with the members of civil society, NGOs, as well as academics. So they are also part of the structures that are going to be used for the processing of the applications, as well as the allocation of land, including on the structures that play a role of land rights inquiry, dispute, as well as the appeals committees. There was a specific question that relates to appeals committees. Who will be sitting on those appeals committees? The appeals committee, like I indicated, it will be a completely an independent structure. The people that are going to be sitting there, they're going to be nominated from academics, academia, legal, as well as organizations or persons who have got understanding of issues related to mediation and dispute resolution. So those are the areas that are going to have been considered to supplement our capacity as a department in order to deal with these matters. I think I've addressed the issues of structure. Screening committee. It will only deal with the screening as well as issues related to verification of existence of the farmers that have applied, so that we don't give a farm to a person that does not exist. However, issues related to shortlisting and interviews are going to be handled at the provincial level. And the final approval will be given by national, where it will be the DDGs that are sitting on that committee, supported again by some national national department, i.e. Department, Ministry of Women, Youth and Persons with Disability, Ministry of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation, and as well as the non-governmental organization, including some of the international organizations that has been identified, like UN Women, as well as Food and So I think we need to appreciate the capacity that we have try to augment, to supplement what the department can do. But again, the emphasis is on fairness, credibility, credible process, as well as ensuring that we are seen to be transparent in terms of what we do.
Can we conclude?
Okay. As I move towards concluding, Chair, I think maybe not taking your time. Let me pause there and allow the chair to finalize everything. Thank you.
Thank you, Maundova, for your input. And due to time constraints, we will have to wrap it there, honorable members, as we have a series of minutes to adopt. I would like to therefore take this opportunity to thank the executive, our honorable minister, Mamoti Deza, as well as the deputy ministers, the honorable Baus Kwacha, as well as the honorable deputy minister, Ubao Dlamini, for having been able to join and be with us on this evening. Let us thank the officials of the department, the acting DG, Ntate Ramasodi, Advocate Mgwengwe, as well as Ubaundova, for your presentations that you put to the committee. It helps us and enlightens us in understanding better this land allocation and how the applications will be dealt with in order for our people to be able to access the much needed land for ensuring food security. We do hope that we will continue to receive progress reports on this. And as Honorable Briet likes saying, our fear is that this must not be lost in sight, but we must be able to follow up as to who are the actual beneficiaries of these land processes, and what are they utilizing the land for, and as farmers, how many jobs are they creating and how much are they having an impact on ensuring that we are able to achieve food security. With that said, Honorable Minister and Deputy Ministers and officials of the department, let us thank you, and you may be released while we proceed, honorable members, with the rest of the evening's business, that being our minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson and members.
Honorable members, we will now go into our minutes, as we do have a handful of minutes to go through. Minutes of the 13th of November, 17th of November, 20th of November, and 24th of November, and lastly but not least, the 27th of November. We shall now proceed with the minutes of the 13th of November, 2020. Page 1 deals with opening and welcoming. Page 2, attendance register and apologies. Page 3, briefing by the AG. Page 4, committee deliberations. Page 5, responses from the Auditor General of South Africa. Page 6, it's a briefing by ARC as well as OBP. Page 7, concluding remarks. And page 8, adjournment of the meeting. Honorable members, can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 13th of November 2020? You may raise your hands for those that are able to. Honorable Stein.
Thank you, Chairperson. I propose that we adopt the minutes of the 13th of November.
Thank you, Honorable Stein, for moving for the adoption of the minutes of 13th of November 2020. Honorable Marshall.
Chairperson, I second for the move.
Thank you, Honorable Marshall, for seconding for the adoption of the minutes of the 13th of November 2020. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8. Honorable members, I take it then that the minutes of the 13th of November are thus truly adopted. And we move on to the minutes of the 17th of November. Page 1.
Chairperson?
Yes.
I was not in on these minutes. But I see I'm listed as ANC. I will never be a member of the ANC, Chair.
Never say never, Kangeba. You don't know what the future holds. But noted, we will correct that.
Thank you.
Thank you. We proceed, page 2. Page 3, summary of proceedings. Page 4, committee deliberations. Page 6, it jumps from 4.2.526. I would say it's supposed to say 5. Consideration and adoption of minutes. Page 7, concluding remarks. Page 8, adjournment. Honorable members, can we have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 17th of November, 2020? Please raise your hands. Honorable Marco, is your hand raised?
Yes, sir. Yes, Chairperson. Hello. Yes, Chairperson. Yes, I move for the adoption of the minutes, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable moves for the adoption of the minutes of the 17th of November, 2020. Honorable Briet.
Chairperson, I will second the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Briet, for seconding for the adoption of the minutes of the 17th of November. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 6, as it says, bullet point number 6. Page 7, concluding remarks. And page 8, adjournment. Honorable members, if there's no matters arising, I take that the minutes of the 17th of November are duly adopted. We move on to the minutes of the 20th of November, 2020. Page 1, opening and welcoming. Page 2, opening of proceedings, attendees register and apologies. Page 3, a briefing from DAF on the 2019-2020 annual report. Page 4, committee deliberations. Page 5, responses from the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Page 6, other business. Page 7, concluding remarks. Page 8, adjournment. Honorable members, can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of 20th of November, 2020?
Yes, Chair. Honorable Mbabama, I would like to move for the adoption of the minutes of the 20th of November.
Thank you, Kangeba. Can I have honorable members seconder for the adoption of the minutes of 20th of November? Honorable Mahlape.
Thank you very much. I second the move of adoption.
Yeah, I nearly seconded.
It's Honorable Bema Sati that raised her head. You could see the evening is taking its toll on us.
It's 2048.
Yeah. Thank you, Honorable Bemahlatsi. Any matters arising, Honorable members?
Yes, Chair.
Yes.
Chairperson, I just want to note that on members' deliberations, we raised much as the issues are captured properly in the minutes, but we've requested that the audit committee to brief us on issues, and it's not captured here. Remember, in the meeting, the former or chairperson of the audit committee was part of the meeting.
Yes.
Yeah.
So include that. I will request the secretariat to include that as bullet 4.1.17.
Yes, chairperson. Number two is also, I'm not sure, we requested, Chair, that we get an understanding around the risk register and the risk committee, as well as at what level are these officials, maybe if they could be captured as well in the minutes.
Okay.
Thank
you. That included, Honorable Mahlatsi. Honorable Mestain, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will mention it now, but I think it's in all the minutes. There might be outstanding issues from the department, Chair. I remember they were still even before now, and you have mentioned that we must look at it. But Chairperson, it's been a long year. I really think that we need to look through all these concluding remarks and outstanding issues that we have asked the department, so that we can compile a list and then maybe make sure that we get it by second week or January or something, so that we can start the year afresh. Otherwise, we will keep on asking questions to the department of outstanding issues, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Stein. We will certainly do that. Any other matters arising, Honorable Members? Honorable Papa? Honorable Papa, your hand is up. Any matters arising?
Yes, Chair. I'll need some assistance. I'm not able to see the minutes here, but when I went through the minutes, there was where I had 4.1.16. I think this is the set of minutes.
Yes.
Yes. My concern there was that there was going to be a information that the committee wanted, and that would be done, but there was no indication when this would come back to the committee. And I was worried about that legal gap loophole, that it leaves it free, that and it can disappear.
Okay. Let us appreciate that, Honorable Kapa. We will, at MENCO level, start putting dates to these things and try and have it requested from the department, so that we are able to have these things lined up for the new year 2021. It will also assist us in drawing up next year's calendar, so we will certainly take that into consideration. Honorable members, any other matters arising? If not, then I take it that the minutes of the 20th of November have been duly adopted. Let us move on to the second last minutes of the 24th of November, 2020. Page one, opening and welcome. page 2, summary and proceedings, which deals with the attendance register and apologies. Page 3, a briefing by the implementation of plans developed by the Special Master of Labor Tenants and the Land Claims Court. Page 4 deals with committee deliberations. Page 5 deals with the responses from the Department of Agriculture, Land Reform and Rural Development. Page 6, a briefing from the Chief Land Claims Commission. Page 7, comments and questions to the Commission. Page 8, concluding remarks. Page 9, adjournment. Honorable members, any mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of November 2020? Please raise your hands. Honorable Kapa, your hand is up.
Thank you, Chair. I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of November as a true reflection of our proceedings. I thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kapa. Honorable members, can I have a seconder for the adoption of the minutes of 24th of November 2020? Raise your hands. Well, Kapa, can you lower your hand?
I'm sorry. I'm trying to lower it.
Can we have a second, honorable members?
Yes, sorry, Chairperson. I missed it. Doesn't look like my hand wants to rise again.
Okay, go ahead, honorable Stein.
Chairperson, my hand is tired. It doesn't want to rise. Chairperson, I'm seconding the minutes of, I can't remember, is it the 27th?
24th. Thank you, Honorable Stein, for seconding the adoption of the minutes of the 24th of November 2020. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7. Page 8, page 9, honorable members, if there are no matters arising, I take it that the minutes of the 24th of November 2020 are duly adopted. Let's move on to our last set of minutes, honorable members, of the 27th of November 2020. Page 1, opening and welcome. Page 2. Summary of proceedings, attendance register and apologies. Page 3. Progress report by the Commission on Restitution of Land Rights and on Project Kuyasa. Page 4, committee deliberations. Page 5, responses from the commission. Page 6, consideration and adoption of the committee budgetary review and recommendation report on the former Department of Agriculture, Forestry and Fisheries. Page 7, concluding remarks. Page 8, adjournment. Honorable members, can I have a mover for the adoption of the minutes of the 27th of November 2020? Honorable Briet.
Chairperson, I move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you, Honorable Briet, for moving for the adoption of the minutes of the 27th of November 2020. Can I have a seconder, Honorable Masipa?
Chair, I move to second the adoption of the minutes of the 27th. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Masipa, for seconding for the adoption of the minutes of the 27th of November 2020. Honorable members, any matters arising? Page 1. Page 2. Mema Hlatsi.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm not necessarily on page 2, but okay. I've noted, Chair, on the minutes that on a committee of deliberations where we spoke about the OPG, we also made a request for this SLA between the commission and the OVG to be made available.
Okay.
Thank you.
So that is 4.1.4. We must include that.
Yes, Chair, that can be made available to members of the committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mema Hlatsi. Honorable members, any other matters arising on page 4? Committee deliberations. Page 5. Page 6. Page 7,
Chairperson, we only had page 4.
Eh? No, Honorable Member, you know, we
I'm watching you.
I don't have pages, so I use the bullet points as my numbers. So when I say page 8, I'm actually saying bullet point number 8, which deals with adjournment. That's how I'm going through the pages, because it doesn't show me pages on these gadgets. Honorable members, if there's no other matters arising, I take it therefore that the minutes of the 27th of November 2020 are duly adopted. And that brings us to the end of our agenda. And thus the meeting stands adjourned. Honorable members, it has been a long day. Please get some rest and ensure that you are up fresh and early tomorrow for further business of Parliament. Thank you. Yes,
Honorable
Members. The chair.
We'll meet at the BRRR tomorrow again.
So it's the end of our committee meeting for this year.
I'm trying to find if this is the last one.
Yeah. Yes, actually, you are quite correct, Dr. Masipa. This is our last meeting for 2020. And it has been a wonderful year, honorable members, having been able to work with you and navigate and engage with you through the departmental issues. You've helped us to grow and gain insight in a number of incidences we've had and cases we've had with the department. And I'd like to thank you all for your contributions. But most importantly, honorable members, let us also thank our staff, the secretariat. Also thank the content advisors, the researchers, as well as the logistics people like Mema Ledu, who keep this committee going with information and always ensuring that we have sufficient information to be able to apply our minds into the work we do. We would not be successful in doing our work without the support that we get from the staff, and I'd like us to please give them a round of applause. We truly thank them for having been with us and being very patient with all the frustrations we often have, but they continue to assist us and ensure that we are able to get through the work that we need to as a committee. It has indeed been able to assist us to grow and better understand the work that we ought to be doing as honorable members. Please take this time to relax and spend with your families. Be very aware of the roads out there, because this period, as we go into the festive seasons, the numbers rise of road accidents and deaths. Do not become a statistic. Please utilize this time to stay home with family and enjoy catching up with friends and members of the family, and come back strong in the new year to start our work. We will try before we end the year to circulate the program for the next quarter. That being January to March, so that you can also be able to give us input as MENCO, what you think we ought to be prioritizing for the next quarter, that being January to March. Honorable members, I thank you for having enabled me to lead this committee as your chairperson. And I've truly enjoyed and grown from working with you all. Thank you. Have a wonderful evening.
Chairperson.
Thank
you very much. I don't want to, I echo everything you said, but I think it's important just for the members in the Eastern Cape and maybe the Free State. We have locusts that started off in sections of the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape border. They are now on our farm for the last 3 days in that area. So they are, it seems like they are moving east in the Eastern Cape, and they might be in the Southern Free State area. So I think we just need to keep track of that. It's quite big swarms of locusts, Chair. So it's just for us to keep track of that. Thank you.
Okay. Those that come into contact with that, please keep us on the alert so we can be able to engage and inform the department. Thank you, honorable members. Have yourself a good evening.
Long live the chair.
You
didn't say that word. So I was going to challenge you for a special meeting.
Good night.
Good night, colleagues. It's 9 o'clock, so some of us should be sleeping by now.